This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
One of the many treasures of practice is we get to be friendly with our neuroses. Sometimes what we perceive as our neuroses wind up in a kind of adversarial situation with us. We were talking last week, one of our Sangha members, who's a psychologist, I guess in the diagnostic manual, which is, some of you have seen it, it's about the size of a phone book, doesn't use that word anymore. Neuroses, neurosis. So by that I simply mean our unhelpful habits of mind and body, those ingrained patterns of behavior and thinking that are really contrary to well-being and happiness and liberation for oneself and others. And they certainly can be vexing. Their main power, though, comes from what looks like their capacity to compel behavior. And they don't actually have that capacity. That's part of their enchantment, is that they seem like they can do that. But they are they're more like a sleight of hand expert who can make reality or things look a certain way and thus invite a certain reaction. But the eye of practice can actually reveal that things aren't the way the magician is trying to make them look. And perceiving that, we enter the process of whatever's unfolding in a different way, such that our behavior is not compelled any longer. Now, all of you have had that experience. We're in some situation and one of our unhelpful behaviors is about to manifest, and we see, oh, there I go again. We're actually there a bit ahead of its complete manifestation. And this turning the eye of our deep and peaceful heart, turning that eye on this process, can allow it to blossom and fall away without actually compelling that behavior, whatever it was. This can cover all manner of bad habits, substance abuse, or being mean to people, or basically any of those behaviors that are kind of go against the grain of the precepts, which, as you know, are, I guess you could say, engineered to help our mind be settled, such that this kind of observation that I'm speaking of is possible. So if our bad habits involve taking what isn't ours, or deliberately misstating the truth, or disrespecting somebody, or any of those things, we're taught in Buddha Dharma that the seeds of these unhelpful behaviors are deeply planted and go so far back that maybe the Buddhas can see where they start, but pretty much nobody else. So instead of trying to find out where they start and dig them up or something, we remove from them the capacity to compel our behavior. And again, the essential element of that is, you might say, presence. Sometimes called, I don't know, mindfulness or smriti. In Western spirituality, recollection is a word often used. And really, you'd be amazed, you probably already have been amazed at how effective, how powerful that is. There's another little twist to this, of course. If, in some way, these unhelpful behaviors have in the past been helpful or seemed to be helpful. That is, there was a time of body-mind learning for us where some behavior seemed to be adaptive. For instance, in some environments or some circumstances, it might have been not just helpful, but essential to misstate the truth. Because stating the truth might actually put us in danger from, for instance, an abusive parent. Just one example of so many in our human life. And given how helpful that particular behavior might have been in protecting us for so long, it's not surprising that when we're no longer a child and we're no longer in that vulnerable place, we still rely on it. So then someone comes along and says, the Buddhas have these things called the precepts, and one of them is, you shouldn't mistake the truth. And we hear that, and we start to reflect that, I'm kind of good at misstating the truth, and it's been pretty helpful, but maybe it's not so helpful anymore. And one of the effects of Buddha's teaching is to start that kind of thinking, maybe this isn't so helpful anymore. And that already, the gate of liberation is once again swinging open for you and for all beings. So, I suppose you could say this sort of way of thinking about practice maybe is not so, it's not very dramatic, I guess. Maybe it's a lot more interesting or exciting to think about a psychological event in which we are, bathed with light or something, and feel we have been granted a profound insight into reality. That is more entertaining. But at least as I see it, it's not so good to count on that or make that the, what should I say, the reason for practice. In other words, I'll practice because one day I will be bathed in radiance and filled with insight. This is, as we've been taught, a very, very limiting approach to practice. Whereas these little, the bits and pieces, to use a Zen phrase, turning the eye of practice, which is really just your eye, the eye you already have, onto the boiling cauldron of our bad habits is an immensely powerful and significant act. It's an act of generosity, an act of uprightness, an act of vigor or strength, an act of wisdom, and so forth. Undramatic as it is, our ancestor Dongshan was discussing something like this with his teacher, Yun Yun, who was evidently, well, I don't know, maybe somewhat short-tempered. And maybe that was part of what he had to deal with. But Dongshan, or rather Yun Yun, was talking about these eyes, the eyes we already have, as the light of liberation. And Dongshan rejected that and said, well, those aren't my eyes. So Yun Yun says, get out! That was the end of that conversation. But as you know, in that story, it was just those eyes that were the occasion for Dongshan's own awakening after he had already left his teacher, thinking, oh, that didn't work. I spent years with that guy and nothing happened, so I'm out of here. And then, as you've heard, having traveled quite some distance, he crosses a stream and with those very eyes sees his reflection in the water and realized that the light had always been on. Just those two eyes, be they gray or brown or blue or violet. I don't think I've ever seen anybody with violet eyes, but I'm told that does occur. Personally, I always wanted to have green eyes, but it didn't work out that way. Anyway, those eyes. So the implication is that the wish-fulfilling jewel, as we've been reading in our study hour during the week, the wish-fulfilling jewel is not something that we travel to get. This notion of the wish-fulfilling jewel, I think, is one of those stories about human life that Dr. Jung would say, you know, you see something about that, some aspect of that in every culture. Anyway, in Indian culture, it was like sort of like the philosopher's stone, that if one is in possession of this jewel, one can bring about whatever one wishes. If you put that in the context of Buddhist practice, it becomes a symbol, if you like, of awakening. And further, awakening for all beings, since, well, if you're a Buddhist, that's kind of what you wish for. So we were reading this charming story about yet more ancestors, our zany Zen family. Oh, by the way, I think I've mentioned before, there's this movie on YouTube about this West Virginian family, the Whites. It's called The Wild and Wacky Whites of West Virginia or something like that. It's actually a documentary. I highly recommend it. Talk about zany families and people with, oh my God, a lot of bad habits. Anyway, in our zany family, there's this guy, Nanchuan, and he had a student named Lutsu. And Lutsu had a lot on the ball, but he was still, I think he was thinking, as did some time before, Dongshan, he was thinking, oh, not my eyes. No. So he asked his teacher, he says to Nanchuan, people don't understand the wish-fulfilling jewel is personally obtained from the mine of the realization of thusness. So he asks Nanchuan, so where is this mine? And Nanchuan says, that in me that goes along with you, that's it. It comes and goes with you, that's it. And Lutsu says, being a good Buddhist, he says, well, what about what doesn't come and go? And Nanchuan says, that too. So then Lutsu naturally asks, well, what about the jewel? What's the jewel? And Nanchuan says, Lutsu. And Lutsu says, yeah. And Nanchuan says, you don't understand my words. Get lost. At which point, Lutsu wakes up. And any further doubts he had about these eyes are defeated. And presumably, then, his practice of watching the unfolding productions of mind, body-mind, simply continued on from that point, much as it had before. But maybe there was a lot more gratitude in there. And maybe quite a bit less fretting about those neuroses. Having seen how they are defeated. Naturally, at the heart of all of this is our practice of sitting still, which helps sustain those eyes that watch the world arise and pass away. foster the understanding, oh, there I go again. And thwart the attempts of the magician to enchant us. And thus the ponderous and powerful machinery of karma is, you know, a wrench gets thrown in those works. So, paraphrasing Suzuki Roshi a little bit, you know, be happy about your neuroses. Do not fight with them or despise them. Use them to make real, over and over again, the gate of liberation. And of course, we need to trust that process. Otherwise, we'll be constantly trying to catch it at work. You know? We need to trust it so much that we don't have to catch it at work. You just know it works. And that way the mine of the realization of thusness, how do you say, goes along with us. That in me, which comes and goes with you, is it. So in Zen fashion, sometimes the speaker will say, if anyone has any doubts, please bring them forth and I will dispel them for you. So I'm not sure that's, you know, there's a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek there. But anyway, go ahead. You have any doubts? Let's kick them around. Yes.
Not so much a doubt, but I have a problem with one of the words.
Mm-hmm.
The wish fulfilling jewel is obtained.
Yeah, I had a problem with that too.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just
one more try.
The word obtained, the jewel is obtained. That's a little bit of a license there. Yeah. Yeah, good. Caught that one. Yes?
Isn't it a cow sometimes?
A cow?
Wish-fulfilling cow.
There's a wish-fulfilling cow? There is.
So there's a prison professor who says, oh, you know what, they're actually, you know, consciousness, what it is it's the brain creates, there's any consciousness, the brain creates, synthesizes all the sensory information and data and creates an illusion of consciousness so we think we're conscious, and that actually helps us adaptively. It's like, I don't understand
what?
That. Do you understand?
No,
that?
I do not understand that.
I don't get that either. Okay.
That's very odd.
I was missing something.
I assume he's a Princeton professor. He's very, very smart.
Yeah,
maybe he's a little too smart.
Maybe he's just saying consciousness is ungraspable.
That would be great. But it doesn't sound like it.
He's saying in 5 to 10 years, computers will have it because we'll teach them to do the same.
We have modeled them, modeled consciousness perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I might be alive in 5 to 10 years, and if I am, I'll be very surprised if I see any conscious computers wandering around. my love of science fiction notwithstanding.
We do, we're going to have to teach them this path. You
know, we are.
There's going to be suffering.
We are the poor things. And we, most of all, we have to teach them the precepts. Yes.
It's a personal question.
Okay.
Do you know or not, do you not try to follow the way the awakening comes?
Do I not, do I try to follow?
You know, you were saying that we don't try to follow.
Catch it at work.
Yeah. Do you not try to do that?
I think I'm not at 100% yet not doing that. But I'm creeping up on it. And if I do still do that, I catch myself, it's like, oh, you still doubt that? How did you doubt that after all this time? And then we have a little conversation about that. So I practice with that. Yes.
I'm not sure how this relates to what you were saying. It did when you first started talking, but then with the question and answers that I got sidetracked with consciousness and so on and so forth. But
consciousness will do that. Yeah.
As you know, yesterday was not the best day for me.
I had
one series of events after another, and at some point during the day, I was thinking, the thought in my mind that, you know, in the not-too-distant past, this would have been a matter of the first event happens, then it's like, oh, I'm angry. And then that would either actually give rise to the second event, or it would color my attitude towards the second event when it occurred, and then it gets compounded as we go along. And even though it was really an awful day, I can't say that I was terribly bothered by it. The emotive drama didn't arise, and I did think for a moment that it's, that has something to do with this asya.
Or more broadly, practice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or maturity.
Yeah. Mm. Just coming back to what horrible thing is happening right now? Mm-hmm. Don't worry about the horrible thing that happened before. That's already over and done with. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. It was quite interesting, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, for practitioners, part of maturity is having the effects of practice manifest in our lives. So that's definitely a factor. The tendency is for people who aren't aware of their practice to experience days like that rather differently. And the difficulty of the immediate circumstances themselves is compounded by their reactions. So, again, if practice helps us see or experience a kind of spaciousness in these events that we didn't notice before, then hallelujah. And then, of course, we don't want to try and hang our hat on that. No, right. Just let it keep happening, whatever it is. And as we do that, our trust gets deeper and deeper and deeper. Yes?
David's recollection of events yesterday, could this indicate that maybe over time this mechanism of self is kind of losing its grip a little bit? Can we venture into that area?
Well, it depends how you mean that.
Mm-hmm.
If you mean that the mechanism of the apparent self starts to look less and less convincing, I would say yes. But it doesn't really have a grip on anything. So, if I understand you, insight, if you use that word, into the self that is actually present makes the power of the illusion of the self that isn't actually present less and less and less. Does that speak to your...
Yes. The illusion.
Yeah.
Mm. That's a good way.
Yes.
Dear. I have the sense that if you're not, you know, sort of willingly and knowingly transgressing, then you're not actually helping anybody, including the self that is you, you know. Then
yeah, part of the deal is we do have to knowingly and willingly transgress. Now, what does that mean? That simply means that it looks like we're in a world of objects and beings. And by golly, sometimes we have to just behave that way. In fact, most of the time. Yep, looks like they're objects. Yep, looks like they're beings. And to even if my insight is such that I don't see any objects or beings, that's okay. In fact, that's pretty cool. But that's not going to help anybody unless you can actually get the rubber to the road. Okay? And if we're in the great vehicle, as we all certainly are, getting the rubber to the road is pretty important. Or we say, the vow. Step on the vow pedal. All the way down. Yes.
Okay, a slightly different direction.
All right.
So there are two different stories you talked about.
Oh.
Someone basically said, you know, get out.
Yes.
Sometimes that feels almost like, there's something about experiences I've had where people have sort of shouted things like that. It feels almost like, you know, like, kind of like I'm some sort of hollow bell and someone yells inside and that sort of reverberates. Like, what would you say, like, what is that sort of interaction?
I don't see the need to comment on that. Is what you said is like, okay?
All right.
But is there a question in there?
Well, I mean, I guess sometimes we like to hang proverbial descriptors on certain things.
Yeah, let's not do that in this case. Sounds like it's not needed. We can pursue that further, if you wish, perhaps on another occasion.
All right.
Well, the incense stick is almost burning down, so probably means I've been talking long enough.
That's not much time.
And there's not much time left. So please take care of yourselves. Let's take care of one another. Every day is another day to practice.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
May our intention be clear.